I'm Kristen Hatcher, host of Power User TV. Joining me today is Tom Chick of quarter2three.com and Derek Batting of neowin.net. Hi, guys. How are you doing?
Hello. Hi, just fine.
Good. Glad to hear it. Anything new?
Let's see. Quite a bit new. That's what we're
just
here to tell
everyone.
Let me
leave it wide open for you. Actually, before we begin, I want to say that PDC is, in fact, going on this week. And Brad is at PDC, so he's getting all the inside poop on what's going on with the new Microsoft technologies and stuff like that. So we're actually not going to cover the PDC stuff in this show. We're going to wait, and maybe next week Brad will feel like talking about it, assuming that he hasn't under some sort of weird non-disclosure.
And that also means, Kristen, that Derek and I, who are normally the straight guys to Brad's, I guess, Lou Costello,
right.
One of us is going to have to be the cut up and the other's the straight guy. So,
right.
Derek, do you want to be the clown or should I, or should we just wing it?
Wing it.
Okay. Just to let you know in advance, I'm not going to be doing any singing, though.
I was actually going to say that I was pretty sure that I heard Derek volunteer to do some singing.
I don't remember that part. I don't remember that part at all.
Are you sure? Because I seem to remember it. So, yeah, we'll have to... We'll see
what happens.
We'll just have to wait and see. Okay. Well, this week I want to start out with covering a story that we've been covering all along, which is the Google and Microsoft non-compete lawsuit. And the issue, of course, was Microsoft employee Kai-Fu Lee left Microsoft to go work for Google, but he had signed a non-compete agreement. And Microsoft is saying that he's at Google, he would be working on the same technologies as he was at Microsoft. So we have a ruling this week in the case. It's actually not a ruling, it's more of the court's findings in the situation, which is that Lee, in fact, misled Microsoft about returning from his sabbatical, and that he was hired by Google during that sabbatical, and that Lee also assisted Google while still at Microsoft, which, I have to say, really doesn't look good for Google and for Mr. Lee, or Dr. Lee, I should say. So right now, the way it stands is that Lee, in fact, can go work for Google, but he can't work on technologies such as search or speech technologies. He can't set budgets or salaries. He can't decide what research Google will be doing in China. He can't recruit Microsoft employees, and he can't use any confidential information that he has.
He can basically recruit software engineers that don't work at Microsoft, and that's really about all he can do right now. He can get to China, and he can set up an office and start hiring people as long as they're not Microsoft employees, and that's about it.
There is that he can do, though, because I read this long list of things he couldn't do, and I thought, this guy has it great. His job is going to be to sit there and play solitaire all day until the judge says he can actually
exactly.
work.
Exactly. You know, I could do that job for him while this is going on. I'm sure I could if they wouldn't mind paying me his salary during that time. Well, I mean, Tom Burt, who is the Microsoft vice president at Microsoft and the deputy general counsel, in this case, said Dr. Lee is going to be the highest paid HR manager ever. He can't tell them what to do, he can't direct them, and he can't manage them.
Yeah, he's making millions for being a human resources person,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, nice.
Great work if you can get it.
Yeah.
Aside from that whole lawsuit thing.
Well, aside from that, right.
Getting paid to be tied up in litigation.
Right, yeah, exactly. And we had some kind of Google tie-in story to that, didn't we? It was, Google hired another person, but this one is not from Microsoft. So they've perhaps learned their lesson on that, although I'm not really sure about that. So,
Google hired Vinton Cerf, who was one of the quote-unquote founding fathers of the Internet. He worked on ARPANET, which is basically how the Internet came to be. It was the predecessor to the open Internet you have now. And he was one of the people responsible for creating that and was involved in basically making it work, the TCP/IP protocols that are even used today and how to move data packets around across a distributed network like that. So he's one of the originators.
I love the way that BBC News phrased it. They said that he was, quote, involved with the Internet before it even existed.
Nice. Yeah.
It has this great mystic ring
to
it.
Yeah, it does. Well, he actually apparently has a really good sense of humor, too, because he said he's been given this amazing title, which is Chief Internet Evangelist, which he says, suggests he should go from wearing three-piece suits to some sort of ecclesiastical robes, which I thought was funny. And then he went on to describe his actual religion as geek orthodox.
That a boy.
Yeah.
My favorite thing about these stories is they involve people who sound like they're characters in Star Wars.
Yeah.
Know, Kai Fu Lee, Vint Cerf. these guys would have lightsabers, and maybe one of them is a Sith Lord. And
right.
Jedi Knight.
Well, I tell you.
But these are much better than names than, like, you know, John Roberts, the whole issue of him being up for Supreme Court Justice. What a boring name. I mean,
How do you make fun of that? Right?
Yeah, John Roberts. Michael Brown, the FEMA director who stepped down. That's boring stuff. You know,
Give
me stories with guys named Vint Cerf.
Exactly.
That's awesome. I love that.
Yeah, I just got a sneak peek at a BBC article that Google just hired Qui-Gon Jinn.
Nice.
Actually, if you go to the BBC news article on this, you can probably Google it. The title of the article is Google Snaps Up Internet Pioneer. They've got a picture of him. He looks like he could, I mean, aside from the three-piece suit, he does look like he could actually be in Star Wars. So.
He's got a very Obi-Wan Kenobi
look. He does.
He's got
that's
this
the Alec Guinness
smirk.
Obi-Wan.
Yeah, it's great.
He's got this smirk on his face like, yes, I invented the internet.
Right. So I think that's all the Google news that we have this week, which is shocking because Google seems to be in the news quite a bit these days.
Well, I'm sure there will be more.
I've no doubt in my mind that there's going to be plenty more as the days and weeks go on. But in other news, eBay has purchased Skype.
For billions.
For billions of dollars. It's a number that boggles my mind. But then, you know, I've never had more than two pennies to rub together at any given time. eBay buys Skype for $2.6 billion, half in cash and half in stocks.
Staggering.
I'll take
that. And
that's
not all. They promised another $1.5 billion if they meet certain performance standards.
Right, more to come. I can't wrap my head around that kind of money. Of course, I'm assuming, though I don't know, that it's not all just going to, like, one guy who's, you know, living in his mom's basement who created Skype, and, you know, it's probably more than one person, but...
Two guys, actually.
Oh, darn, so they're down to only $1.3 billion each?
Yeah, now they have to split the billions. That sucks.
Right. Skype, of course, is how we're recording this right now, and I see right at this moment... 2,560,739 users online.
Uh-huh.
So I'd say it's a fairly popular program. I don't know. What do you guys? You think 2.5 million people equal popular program?
I would say.
And that's just right now. You know, not.
And they
10
have
minutes.
54 million registered users
right.
as well. So and that's sort of the low number. I think it falls between 2 million and 3.5 million people using Skype at any given moment.
Yeah, I know I've been on when I've seen over 3 million people on, and it's amazing.
They're averaging 150,000 new users per day.
That's actually, those numbers to me are almost more mind-boggling than the 2.6 billion that just purchased them, because I guess I don't think about how many people are actually out there and using the internet at any one given time, and I wonder how much our lives have been changed because of the internet. You know, it's just incredible.
Well, Skype, as far as Skype goes, it's all I use. I have no cell phone, no landline, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It's straight Skype, so that may speak about the popularity of the program and its ease of use right there.
Yeah. You're kind of weird, aren't you, Derek?
I am. I'm a bit geeky, yeah.
Yeah.
Bit of a geek.
Well, that's good. Not everybody's happy about this purchase, though, apparently.
No.
Yeah.
People are pissed.
Yeah. What's the problem exactly?
The problem is that people fear that, one, it's not going to be free anymore. Two, because they're moving from a Luxembourg-based company to a U.S. company, one guy says, how much time before someone makes a Taliban joke and the feds descend on their home with the Patriot Act? Or how long before the music and movie cartels start suing for snooping access to Skype networks through the U.S. Digital Millennium Copyright Act. So there could be wiretapping involved, the feds could get involved, and everybody's worried about that because right now it's just kind of, you know, the Luxembourg company doesn't fall under U.S. jurisdiction, whereas now being bought out by a U.S. company, it potentially could. And, you know, if it's free and open to use and can't be touched by the U.S. government, you know, more people are apt to use it, not necessarily for bad things, you know, but just in general. You know, they feel free to actually use it without, you know, if someone says the word bomb, you know, all of a sudden the feds aren't going to break down their door.
It seems unlikely that if somebody just says the word bomb that would happen.
We'll find out.
We will. I'm assuming we will find out, right. Well, I don't think they've quite made the move just yet. Maybe they have. I don't know. But
There are lots of voiceover IP programs. I don't think there's any shortage of them. And this is just sort of an indication that Skype is perhaps the most popular, the fact that eBay wanted to buy it. I've been using different voiceover IP connections for various gaming purposes for years. There's lots of stuff out there. And I think some of this anger at the acquisition is a little bit of the sort of syndrome when your favorite band goes mainstream, and you know they're not the cool hip underground band anymore. It's now a big corporate enterprise. So that's part of, I think, what we're seeing with Skype.
Yeah. Right.
That's what one article said here was, with startup services like Skype, the early adapters become disillusioned when their favorite company sold. Like how some people revolted against Flickr when it was bought out by Yahoo last month, and Flickr required everyone to have to register on Yahoo's network. So some people just left Flickr altogether. And I think a lot of people think that maybe, you know, with Skype being tied into eBay, that all of a sudden they're going to have an eBay account, or they're going to have a PayPal account, which is also owned by eBay. You know, and if you want to buy Skype out credits to call a landline, then it's probably going to have to be PayPal, and you know, which means you're going to have a credit card or a bank account in PayPal to verify your account, blah, blah, blah. Could be a lot more hassle, you know, and a lot more things, hoops to jump through. And I can see where the concern is.
Yeah, what I kind of wonder is how eBay plans to make money by having purchased Skype, because I'm assuming that's why they did it. They wanted something that was going to help increase their overall revenue. And they actually apparently said that they're hoping that it will actually help accelerate the velocity of trading on eBay and accelerate the volume of payments on PayPal.
Mm-hmm.
So that's their current plan. But I don't think anybody's said at this point whether or not they plan to make it a non-free service.
Yeah, it would be suicide for them to even hint at such a thing right now. But then again, on the other hand, like Tom said, there are several voice over IP applications out there. I mean, Google just recently got into it with Google Talk. MSN is including it. Yahoo already uses it. There are free servers out there like TeamSpeak, Ventrilo, GameCom, et cetera, et cetera. There's really no shortage of voice over IP software, especially for free PC-to-PC calls. It's just that Skype has become so popular via word of mouth and, you know, basic grassroots advertising, viral advertising, that it's become huge.
And we, of course, have tried other voiceover IP programs for this podcast, and Skype offered the highest quality as well. You know, that was probably one of the main reasons why it's as popular as it is. I will say, though, we're about 12 minutes into this podcast, and no one has sung a song yet. And I'm a little disappointed, I have to say.
That might fall to you, Kristen.
That's true. I suppose I could sing my own song, right? But then you would be subjected to my voice, so it's not so good.
Since you guys have used Skype before, do you use the word Skype as a verb? Do you talk about Skyping
each other?
Yes,
we do.
You really do?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Oh. Because that was someone at eBay said that they pointed out when people use your brand name as a verb, it's incredibly powerful. And you talk about eBaying something, you Google something on the internet. I didn't know that. I would have thought that Skype wouldn't have really taken off as a verb. It sounds like when you skip over something or sniping someone.
That's true.
It's an odd word.
Like you're stealing something from somebody.
It sounds a little bit dishonest.
It does, I suppose. I hadn't thought about it that way. But because it's so much a part of my vocabulary now, you know, I'm always talking about, you know, well, I'll give him a Skype or I'll Skype him, you know, which means, you know, not that I will lift his wallet, but I'll actually give him a call. So, well, let's talk about some gaming stuff. The first one that we wanted to talk about is, it's kind of an overarching issue, so I don't want to, you know, make it seem like it's sudden news as of today, but online gaming can be an addiction. Did you guys know this?
No.
Yeah, I know. It's not exactly news to anybody.
Get out of here.
But last month, a South Korean man, a 28-year-old South Korean man, whose name is not in this particular article that I'm reading, quit his job so that he could spend more time playing online games. And he went to an internet cafe and played a game called StarCraft for 50 hours straight. And he did take naps, and he did go to the bathroom, and apparently he did eat snacks or whatever while he was there.
And he did die.
And then he did die. That's right. After 50 hours, He died.
Heart failure.
Yeah. So, obviously, you know, gaming addiction is just as bad as, you know, addiction to drugs and addiction to gambling, that kind of thing.
See, this is, though, one of those sensationalist stories, though, where you don't have the rest of the picture. I mean, and I've heard this has almost acquired the status of an urban legend now, the guy who sits down and plays games so compulsively that he drops dead. We don't know this fella if he was in poor health, if he
That's
had heart
true.
Problems, if
that
he was morbidly obese or anything like that.
And my guess
but
is...
it makes good copy. I mean, it makes a good story.
It does make a good story. And apparently Asia is responding now because they are cracking down on... well, and I say Asia... The article is mostly about South Korea cracking down on online gaming addiction. And, of course, it's not just online gaming, but they're trying to help cure addicts and that kind of thing.
South Korea has gone so far as to design clinics to help cure gaming addicts. I mean, when they're reporting 1% to 2% of South Korea's online gamers suffer from addiction and they want to open up clinics for it, you know, that does say something about they're taking it seriously.
Right.
South Korea is a very, they're certainly a unique phenomenon in the world of gaming, though. The way that South Korea has embraced gaming in general and Blizzard's games in specific, like this
really?
Game, this real-time strategy game, StarCraft, is mind-boggling. StarCraft is a mainstream pop culture phenomenon over there. There's StarCraft breakfast cereal, and it's just,
wow.
It's unprecedented. I don't think any of us can really appreciate how it's taken off over there. So, yeah, South Korea is a little unique in this situation. The interesting approach being taken is from China, where I think they're less concerned about people playing too much and dropping dead as they are concerned about lost productivity. You know, China has a centralized government, a centralized economy. I mean, they don't want otherwise productive people wasting their time playing MMOs. But on the other hand, there's a lot of money in MMOs. It's massively multiplayer online games like World of Warcraft. There's a lot of money there. Blizzard's World of Warcraft has, I think, in excess of 2 million subscribers in China. So China doesn't want these 2 million people sitting down playing 40 hours a week when they could be building tennis shoes or whatnot to
whatever their particular job is.
Yeah,
right.
Mm-hmm. So what China is doing, and this is something that a centralized government can do, is they are working with the internet companies that provide these MMO accounts to, after a person has played for 3 hours, normally when you're playing, you're gathering experience for your character, you become more powerful. After 3 hours, the rate of return for your experience points starts declining. So, for instance, you might kill a monster that's worth 100 experience points, and then after 3 hours, he's only worth 50 experience points. And you get a little warning saying, after 5 hours, you get a warning saying you're entering, quote, unhealthy game time. So anything in excess of 5 hours, the idea is, there's virtually no return for the time you spend playing.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'd say that's a way to definitely cut, you know, have people cut back on their time. Because if they're, the whole point of playing these games is, you know, the excitement that you get and the, you know, it's addictive. It's not the game itself. It's the feeling that it generates in your brain, you know, when you're playing it. So if you're not getting that, assuming you're not going to be getting that if you're not getting any return from it, you're not gaining experience, then you would stop playing it.
Yeah, it's an interesting test, too, in that are people playing this just for the experience points or the social elements that they enjoy, in which case they can still play after 5 hours but not accomplish anything? Who knows? And also interesting is the fact that this doesn't in any way impact the money being made because you pay a monthly fee to play as much as you want. So it doesn't matter to the people selling the game whether you're playing 5 hours a day or 20 hours a day. They're still making the same amount of money.
What I found interesting was the Taiwanese media is reporting robberies of people to get money for their internet cafe usage time so they can play games. I mean, they're actually reporting robberies to get cash to support this particular habit.
As if
which I think, to be fair, though, that's more of an indication that it's really popular among all walks of life. So that's part of, if you get busted for robbing money, the police ask, well, what are you going to do with it? A lot of people, of course, might have spent the money buying time at an internet cafe. I don't think you can necessarily draw any correlation between crime and MMOs.
Right.
But yeah, that's you generally don't hear that in the U.S. You don't have a lot of people stealing purses so that they can pay for their World of Warcraft
accounts. Well, you don't hear about it, no. But, I mean, the truth is, it's not the correlation between crime and MMOs. It's the correlation between crime and an addiction that needs to be supported.
Fair enough. And it is a new dynamic in the world of computer gaming. I mean, traditionally, hardcore gamers like myself play a bunch of different games. And the experience changes. We pour lots of money into the industry by buying different games. And this is a new phenomenon where a game is designed to be played exclusively and over time. And the whole point of the game, there's no end. The whole point of the game is to get you to pay the money every month, and they need to offer some kind of carrot to induce that. And it's very much like maybe putting an additive in nicotine to make you crave it. The whole point of an MMO is to make you crave it enough to pay for the fee next month. And that's something new in computer gaming in the industry.
And of course, it's still going to be probably, you know, only a portion of the population. Just because it's something that's exciting and fun and you want to do it doesn't mean that everybody's going to get addicted to it. It's only the, you know, addictive personality maybe,
exactly.
Or, you know, somebody who right. would have a likelihood of becoming addicted to something in the first place will get addicted to it.
Exactly.
Like anything else.
But yeah, it is a huge phenomenon in Asia, and it's interesting to see how South Korea and China are grappling with it.
Not hearing much about it in the States right now, and I don't know if it's because we're not recognizing it or if it's just really not as big of an issue as the news media might want us to think it is.
Yeah, I think partly it's not as big an issue. Gaming in the States is still... It's achieved sort of a more of a mainstream awareness, but it's still a sort of a niche hobby. And games like World of Warcraft are indeed breaking out of that, The Sims as well. And I think over time it will become increasingly a problem. Right now we're more focused on things like violence and Grand Theft Auto as far as mainstream attention. But yeah, where do patterns of addiction fit in with gaming? I think we'll be hearing more about that in the future, definitely.
Okay, good stuff. Well, that's a very dark topic, so I'm going to move on to something a little bit lighter now. Something with a positive spin. Well, sort of. So this guy in Germany, Christian Koch, has invented something he's calling the KDV 500 technology. He said he produces high-quality fuel from garbage, which is pretty fantastic. Now, the story here, which I thought was a little bit humorous, is German newspaper Bild has reported that he uses dead cats as part of the fuel. And this is the best part, though. The quote, apparently, from him is, he says he uses paper, plastics, textiles, and rubbish to create the fuel. It's complete nonsense to suggest dead cats. I've never used dead cats and would never think of that. And here's the kicker. At most, the odd toad may have jumped in. I had to share that. And of course, naturally, the guy's company is called Alpha Cat.
He was asking for that.
It's actually it's spelled Alphakat, and it's a German company, so it could mean something completely, you know, it may have nothing to do with cats at all, but
Bild did confess that they just put the picture of the cat up as a sort of a hypothetical for what things could be used for biodiesel fuel.
They did. It was two different articles. Apparently one was titled German Inventor Can Turn Cats into Fuel. You know, okay. And then the other one is, can you really make fuel out of cats? So, I mean, they were really pushing that.
And the obvious joke to make here is that's giving new meaning to the old Exxon slogan, put a tiger in your tank. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Good job.
Can we have a rim shot in after that, Christian?
Yeah,
just add that in.
I'm going to have to add that in. Exactly.
I wonder how many miles per kitten he gets.
Nice. All right. So enough of that. You know, joking around now. What do you got else gaming news for us, Tom?
Well, if you have a PlayStation 2,
yes,
you might want to go to Sony's website and check and see if your power cable will blow your house up.
Oh!
Just something
okay.
you might think about.
Yes.
Sony did. A colleague of mine, Matthew Gallant, who writes for CGOnline.com, pointed out that Nintendo is now the only console manufacturer that isn't trying to burn your house down. Because recently Microsoft recalled 10 million power cables for the Xbox, and now Sony has recalled 5 million cables for their PS2s. So if you've got a GameCube, you're okay, but otherwise...
Look out. Yeah.
And a lot of these are, I think they're mainly in Europe. I checked mine right before we started recording today, and you'll be relieved to know I'm safe. I'm okay.
Ah, good. I am glad to hear that.
So those of you in Europe with those new smaller PS2s, might want to look into that. And I think it's a situation where the temperature of the AC adapter is above what the utility laboratories have deemed safe. I don't think they're literally burning anyone's house down.
Okay.
But there's been a recall issued.
And
yeah, there have been two reports of minor burns, one minor shock, and four reports of minor property damage. So for what that's worth.
Mm-hmm. But, you know,
That's not bad out of 5 million.
It's really not.
Right.
I was going to say, the minute anybody complains, you know, other people are going to start complaining. So they have to do this recall, which was perhaps, I have no idea. Maybe it was necessary. Maybe it wasn't. But anyway, check it out. Is there a website, Tom, that they,
Website is, it's listed here. It says ps2ac.com.
Okay.
Thank you, Derek. Thank you.
Yes. And you can check your, I guess, your serial number on it or whatever and see if it needs to be recalled. And you can also call 1-888-780-7690 or go to www.us.playstation.com for more information about the whole thing.
My goodness, Derek.
Well done.
You're just full of good information.
Just the facts, ma'am.
All right, so I'll let you off the hook for singing this week then.
Thank you.
What else, Tom?
Also this week at the Tokyo Game Show, Microsoft announced the date for the launch of the Xbox 360, is sort of the hot ticket item this holiday, if you'll believe the hype. And so on November 22nd, barely squeaking it in under the deadline for that all-important post-Thanksgiving shopping
weekend,
the Xbox 360 will be available. There is a $300 core system. And then the one they want you to buy is the $400 full system, which has a detachable hard drive and the wireless controllers. So that begins November 22nd. Early December, it'll also come out in Europe, and then a week later in Japan. So
right.
On tenterhooks waiting for that.
Yeah. So for those with a gaming addiction, they can go out and get the newest, latest, greatest thing, yes.
Yeah, no word on when China will let it in.
Right.
Xbox 360 serial, maybe?
I'm sure Microsoft would love for it to reach that level of popularity.
Right.
We'll see. Also this week, there was a game from 12 years ago called Sam and Max Hit the Road. It was perhaps the nonpareil of adventure gaming. It was about a dog and a rabbit. I think the dog was Sam and the rabbit was Max. And they were freelance police officers, very tongue-in-cheek. Amazing sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
It mixed up puzzles with little action mini games. And then it did well, and then promptly nothing was done with it. No sequels, no expansions. And last year, shortly after announcing that they were developing a sequel, LucasArts then canceled the sequel.
Hmm.
So this week we found out, however, that a company called Telltale Games has indeed picked up the license and will be releasing as mini games, sort of as episodes, like a TV sitcom, will be releasing new Sam and Max games, which is great news for those of us who really missed that sense of humor and the stylish writing, the look of it. So that will be returning not with the help of the original creator, Steve Purcell, but with his blessing.
Steve Purcell,
yeah, he's now at Pixar, and so Telltale Games is picking up the reins, and we'll be seeing new Sam and Max games shortly, which is great news.
Yeah. Do you think, Tom, you know, we've certainly seen a lot of movies and new TV shows now being made out of the, you know, like 70s TV shows. Were there a lot of games, you know, older games, you know, how old can a video game really be? But, you know, any older games that were actually good enough, you think, to revive and revamp for the new systems? Or is
sure,
this going to
sure.
be one of a...
No,
rarity.
We'll be seeing the big what you really need to do to have a successful game these days is have some kind of a license, and whether it's a recent movie or an older movie, which we're increasingly seeing, or even an older game, any sort of brand recognition that a game company can get, they are frantically scrabbling for. So I think a lot of what they're counting on with this Sam and Max remake is guys in their 30s who remember that game. Who will gladly play anything with that name. So, yeah, we'll see a lot of that. And, you know, games from back then, Sid Meier's early designs, like Pirates and Railroad Tycoon,
mm-hmm.
Have been recreated. Those properties are very valuable, and I think we'll see a lot of that.
Great.
You know what I would like to see? I would like to see another Commander Keen game.
I'm not
That's
familiar
a
with that one.
Early id stuff?
Yeah.
Or what?
Yeah.
Who did the... Yeah.
Yeah, that was id.
I think it has their hands full, but that sort of thing, Derek. They would love to make something like that and have a guy like you say, yeah, I remember that, and pick up the new game. So yeah,
I would totally pick that up. As you all know, I'm not a big gamer, but if I saw something with the Commander Keen name on it, you know, the kid in a football helmet and his little dog on the cover, I would buy it in a heartbeat just because I can remember back when I used to play them.
Let me throw a couple more. Would you buy a game with Taxi Driver, the Robert De Niro movie? Would that make you want to buy a game?
No.
Probably not.
Okay, well, you're letting down the company who's doing that. What about The Warriors, that old 70s thing about the gang trying to get across New York to Coney Island? Do you guys remember that movie?
I don't remember that one.
Okay, well.
No, sounds like Escape from New York kind of thing.
Very much so. It sort of predated Escape from New York. That's okay. That's actually going to be a fairly big profile rock star game, the people that did Grand Theft Auto. Yeah. Jaws. Would Jaws make you want to buy a game, Derek?
Probably not.
What would the strategy be in the Jaws game?
Yeah, because I guess the thing is to, you know, you'd probably have to buy barrels of explosives and, you know, sit there and throw chum into the water. And you're obviously going to need a bigger boat. So
very nice, but you're taking the wrong angle. You're the shark this time.
Nice.
Well, then I just eat everything. Where's the
exactly.
fun in that?
Well, so then there's like the guys Pac-Man? With the explosive barrels chasing you. You see? So
I see. Well, that could be interesting. That could be interesting.
But yes, in answer to your question, Kristen, you will see old games being revived, old movies revived, old TV shows, anything to get a hook in the retail market. You will definitely be seeing more of.
Well, that's great. I think.
Exactly, yeah. At first blush, that does sound great, but when you imagine, you know, a Dukes of Hazzard game, maybe that's not so
much. Well, then again, you know, plenty of those racing games have been popular, so maybe that's what a Dukes of Hazzard game would turn out to be, is some cross between The Simpsons. I can't remember what. It's the good one, you know, the good Simpsons game.
Simpsons Road Rage.
That's
I believe,
the one, yeah. And one of those racing games, maybe.
Yeah, I'm afraid I'm going to have to disappoint you, though, and say they already tried a Dukes of Hazzard game, and I think it sank without a trace.
That does not surprise me, though. Not at all. You know, it's funny, too, though. We look back, or at least I do, look back on some of those TV shows with nostalgia, but then if you go back and watch them and you realize they were never really that good to begin with. So
it can be painful.
Yeah, maybe. I haven't seen the Dukes of Hazzard movie either, but I haven't heard good reviews about it, so who knows.
Well, how many times have you read a review where the game that ties to the movie is actually better than the movie?
That has happened.
It has happened, but not very often in my
There was a very successful first-person shooter called Chronicles of Riddick, which is based on the Chronicles of Riddick movie, which was horrible, and the game was amazing. They did a wonderful job with that, and the movie was horrible.
Right.
So you do occasionally see things like that, but you're right, Derek, that rarely happens.
There's a big disparity between the way a story works in a movie and the way a story works in a game. And some people feel like, well, if it works in one place, it should work in another, but it doesn't always work out that way,
right.
Clearly. Especially as we've seen some movies that have been made from video games that
that is
have
a whole
not
other
yeah.
Out. Yeah. Reverse engineering that process is still not going very well.
Right. Sad but true. Do we have other video game news?
That's pretty much it for the big news this week. What I would like to do this week I think every week, maybe offer a recommendation to people, maybe like Derek, who aren't normally into games, or even people who do like games, sort of a game of the week segment.
Fantastic.
So this week...
Well, wait. I'm going to come up with some music. Everybody silent for a second.
Wow,
I'll put
great.
Some music in
I get
here.
A theme.
I'll give you your own theme. Okay, good. Go ahead.
The recommendation of the week... on Tuesday, September 20th, you should be able to find in stores a strange little title called We Love Katamari. You will probably have no idea what that is, so I'll tell you a little bit about it. Derek sold. Awesome. That's
nice.
My work is done.
That's all we need.
There was a game released last year to very little fanfare called Katamari Damacy. Which
I've heard of
I
this.
Think, it, and it literally, most people have heard of it. I was actually at a movie theater and could hear the people in the front row talking about Katamari Damacy, and that's odd. It was mentioned out in the wild. It literally translates, I think, to Clump of Souls. That's what the title
wow.
means. And you in the game, you're rolling a ball around in the world, and whenever you hit something with a ball, it sticks to your ball.
Yes.
And your ball gets bigger and bigger as you pick up more stuff, and you go from picking up your little tiny person, you go from picking up pennies and paperclips to cars and cows, eventually to entire skyscrapers. And the game did surprisingly well. No one expected something so offbeat to succeed as well as it did. And so We Love Katamari is now the sequel. And I heartily recommend it. It's amazing. They've done a great job of following up on what made the previous game good. It's got just as much charm as it always had. It's the sort of thing you can put in anybody's hands and just watch them start smiling. Great game, and I recommend that for the week of the 19th.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Tom. We'll have to
No word on Commander Keen, though, huh?
There might be someone laboring deep in an underground lab on that right now.
Right.
We'll find out.
Right.
Whoever they are, I love them.
Good. Well, that's excellent. All right, thank you very much, Tom. Derek, is there anything else that you wanted to cover this week?
I'm not singing.
Well, okay. In other news, Derek isn't singing this week, so very good. All right, we'll be back next week, probably with some coverage of PDC with Brad Wardell back in the office. Thanks for listening, everyone. This podcast was brought to you by NeoWin.net and WinCustomize.com and QuarterTo3.com. Support us by subscribing to us on iTunes, Podnova, or Odeo.com. And look for us every week at www.poweruser.tv.
I'm a lumberjack and I'm okay.
Totally leaving that in.